Welcome to Conversations in MedEd, the people behind the research. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for joining.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Could you maybe just introduce yourself to our listeners? So who are you, where are you based, and what do you do?
Sure. So my name is Jeff Stetson, and I am an internal medicine doctor originally, but I work at UIC, so the University of Illinois in Chicago, and I am a clinician educator, but I also teach others how to teach in the clinical setting and try to do some research and scholarship around all that.
Great. And how have you moved from sort of internal medicine clinician through to medical educator and faculty developer?
Great question. Yeah. So I like to start at the beginning. When I was growing up, my dad was a biology professor at Ohio State University. So I grew up in Ohio, and we had a chalkboard in our kitchen, and so we'd get, lectures at dinner, which was very annoying at the time. But, I guess I kind of grew up in this household that really valued education and the educational process. Fast forward to college, or right after college, I went and lived in Nicaragua for a year and did public health and community development work in Managua, the capital city there. And a lot of that was education. So I kind of got that, and I was teaching kids from preschool all the way up through, mid-20s in various capacities. So I kind of caught the teaching bug there. Building curricula and watching people grow and learn was really fun. And I went from there to med school and had just such a interesting experience in medical school. I was really fascinated by education, and where I went to med school, there were some superstar educators, some people who I really, really, really looked up to, who could command a room and translate these really complex topics into really, approachable subjects. And then there were some other teachers who just were not good. And then there were others, especially in the clinical setting, who were like downright mean and abusive. And that wasn't special to my med school. Yeah. That's just how the system is, unfortunately. So I got really motivated to make a difference, while I was in medical school, but there wasn't a lot I could do at that point, because I had to go learn how to be a doctor. So I went to residency. And I went to UCSF for residency, which is a place that really values health professions education and puts a lot of emphasis on it and the scholarship of it. So I saw this machine that worked really well in terms of integrating best practices into teaching and really emphasized being a great educator as like a thing that most people should be. And again, some superstars I got to learn from, but it was not without its problems, as all of our institutions have. But I got to learn from a lot of people. I got special training in health professions education, and kind of my first job as a medical educator was, I was tasked with developing a teaching to teach course for the internal medicine residency program. So I developed that and taught that for 7 years. And so I just worked with one resident a month. It was like this kind of apprenticeship model. And we'd go over a lot of the just fundamental stuff of teaching in the clinical setting, from doing direct observations, getting specific nuggets of information to give to your learners, how to provide feedback effectively, how to write learning objectives, how to do chalk talk. And I would videotape them and make them watch their videotape, and I'd watch it, and we'd reflect on it together. It was a lot of fun. And so that's where I gained a lot of my skills, was building this curriculum and refining it over time and learning about all the theories that underpin the work we could and should be doing.
It's so interesting. There's always that sort of service versus education debate within the clinical platform, and how these clinicians, they're obviously expected to offer, deliver healthcare, but at the same time train the juniors. And yeah, I guess the great irony is that they're not trained educators. And, you know, there might be some with inherent sort of passion and ability. As you said, there are many who, I guess, sort of stumble their way through and sometimes do harm despite, you know, not having negative intentions. So what do you think are some of the challenges when it comes to faculty development? And do you have any recommendations on how to overcome those challenges?
Yeah, great question. So the biggest challenge is just emphasis. I think we don't, I've never been at an institution that has any mandatory training, which is kind of nuts to me. And when I teach about this, I like to draw this parallel between teaching in medical school and my son's teachers, who he just finished kindergarten and he's in first grade. And they, you know, they had to go to 4 years of school, pass all these tests, be observed in the classroom for at least a year. And they're teaching him, like, not to hit his friends and not to, you know, wipe his food on his shirt. And, you know, some pretty basic stuff, how to hold his pencil correctly. And we're teaching people how to tell people they have cancer and how to deliver chemotherapy and how to, you know, not cut an artery when you're inside a person's body. Like, much higher stakes than using your clothes as a napkin. So we just have to prioritize it and emphasize it. And that has to come from the top. So that's a lot of what I'm working on at my institution, is delivering content, but also trying to stimulate culture change and get the leaders at institutions to put time and money into this endeavor, because our faculty they're so busy, you know, they're pulled in so many different directions. And right now it's all like becoming a good teacher is voluntary, and that just can't be the way it is if we are truly an institution of education. Being a great teacher, or learning to be a good teacher, can't be voluntary. It just needs to be foundational. Like, we always joke, there's all these modules we have to do every year, and one's like how to clean up chemical spills and what to do if there's a fire. And I've never encountered a fire in the hospital. I've never had to deal with a chemical spill, but I teach every day. And there's nothing about teaching.
It's so interesting because, I mean, it's a professional identity and professional identity development, but they always see clinician as separate, or you might have a dual clinician educator, but they're almost the exception to the rule, or those who progress to, you know, educator or educationalist. And as you said, they should be married. If you're a clinician, you're also an educator. It's just inherent in the role, and yet they're seen as something separate. Do you think that we need to sort of redefine what it means to be a clinician or to be a healthcare worker? And it needs to be perhaps embedded at also an undergraduate level, where it's not just something that's suddenly thrust upon them in sort of postgraduate training or graduate training, residency, and so on. I mean, of course, with culture change institutions, I think that's also very hard. How do you get people to care, to understand and care and actually affect structural change? But any thoughts on identity and where it might be effective to sort of insert or embed this whole educator identity aspect, or how to create an educational culture where it's seen as important as the sort of medical culture?
I think that's a great question. And all the institutions I've been at have pathways for learners. So I'll just speak about the American system. So we have 4 years of medical school after an undergraduate degree, and then our clinical training, we call residency. And all the med schools have had these health clinician educator tracks. Mm-hmm. So some extra training, again, voluntary. And then all the residencies I've seen have clinician educator tracks, things you can opt into, which is a great start to have this stuff available for those who are really interested in becoming a clinician educator or more, is really a great start. But I do think integrating things earlier is part of this greater culture change that we should try to push. Is just like, hey, we're teaching you to be a doctor. You're also going to be with learners.
Yeah.
So let's work on this educator thing along the way. Both where I did my residency and here at UIC, at least in the internal medicine residency, there's a day retreat where they get people ready to be senior residents, so where they're starting to supervise, and they do some stuff during that one day. But that's it. Like, that's the only mandatory thing, is this one day that's dedicated to learning how to supervise. So I think it would be great to start to integrate much more in residencies. And then in medical schools, I think it would be cool to pull back the curtain a little bit on the education and what we're doing. So one thing I do with medical students is, so feedback is one of my favorite topics. I love feedback. And I think it's the most important teaching skill that anyone could work on. It's really my number one tool that I use. And I do a lot of work with faculty to help them facilitate feedback conversations. But I also think it's just as important to work with students on how to be a part of that conversation and how to pull out the nuggets that help them, how to clarify the feedback they're getting, how to solicit feedback. There's a lot that they can be a part of and have agency over if they're given the tools and understanding. So things like that, just showing them that there's a method to the madness here, and you're not just this, you're not just at the mercy of the system, and showing them that they can participate in their own education in an active way, I think would help to really grease the wheels of this system as they grow up in it.
I like that, giving them sort of agency within the system to take control of their own learning. So you mentioned that fact that feedback is evidence-based, and I think evidence-based is something I will try and, it's a common ground that I bring in when I work with practitioners or health professionals, to say, just as healthcare is meant to be evidence-based and you have best sort of recommendations and guidelines, it's the same for education. You can't just do whatever you want. Like, intuition and tradition, not good enough. Like, you need to be scholarly in your education as you are in your healthcare practice. And sometimes you see the light bulb go off. They're like, oh, okay. But do you have any evidence-based tips around feedback? Because I think that's something that's super important. It's a day-to-day, you know, it could be a 2-minute conversation in the passageway. So any tips for developing feedback literacy in both students and staff?
So much. So many things.
Your favorite takeaways. Quick and dirty tips.
Okay. So first, I would say set the expectation. I think expectations are key to a great learning culture. So knowing what's expected of you and what to expect. So just saying, you know, hey, we're going to do feedback. And that's because we're all growing. You all are learners, trainees by definition. So this is not when I give you things to work on, that is a gift. This is not a punishment. This is not punitive. This is, hey, I noticed this thing where you can grow and let me help you with that. And it doesn't mean you're not doing well. It's just, you know, this is what you need. This is the data you need to grow. And that's why you're a trainee. On the other hand, I am also growing. I am not the best teacher I can be. I'm not the best clinician I can be. And I can't see myself. So I need all of you to help me to grow as well. So just setting this expectation that, like, hey, we're all growing and we all just by definition cannot see ourselves and our impact on other people. And that's why we need to help each other to provide data for growth. So just like reducing the hierarchy and setting the expectation that we're going to help each other by giving each other feedback. And then I say, I'm going to give each of you feedback every day. And that way, you know, everyone's getting the same quantity and no one feels kind of singled out for getting more feedback or less feedback than other people. And sometimes more feels good, sometimes more feels worse, and a lot's there. So just try to keep the quantity the same. And then one of my mentors and the feedback guru is this man named Calvin Chow, who works at UCSF. And he espouses a ratio of 4 reinforcing tidbits to one piece of information that someone can grow with. So reinforcing to modifying. Okay. And this ratio comes from this study. I think it's Google who did it, but it was kind of seeing what the ratio was in the high functioning teams. So teams that were high functioning kind of had this 4-to-1 ratio going on. He also likes to say that in couples, a high functioning couple, the ratio is 6-to-1. So we need to be very nice to our partners is the takeaway. But that 4-to-1 ratio, I use it as a gestalt thing. Mm-hmm. I want to feel like I'm giving people much more reinforcing stuff, because our learners are doing great stuff all the time and it can be small, and just saying, hey, keep doing this. This is good. Keep doing this piece. This piece is good. It makes them feel better. And it is feedback. It's like, hey, this, you got this thing going well. Keep doing it this way. And then I give people one thing to work on each day and no more than one, because A, it feels bad to hear more than one. Yeah. And B, you can't really work on more than one at a time. So just one thing. So if you've written down, oh, take notes.
Yes.
always take notes. People, you cannot be a good feedback taker, or you cannot
put it into action.
Lead a good feedback conversation if you're not taking notes and being very specific. Mm-hmm. So definitely take notes. And yeah, you can't work. If you've written down 5 things, just pick the number one thing to work on. Lastly, feedback is a conversation. So I always start with, hey, how do you think that went? And how did that go for you? What were things you did well? What were things you want to work on? This does a few things. Learners will often be harder on themselves than you're going to be on them. So then you just get to give the good stuff. they've already done the hard part and you're like, I think you did better than you think. Like, here's what you did really well. That the one thing I think you should work on is X, Y, and Z, but you did better than you think. So they'll give themselves the hard feedback often. It also starts this metacognitive process of analyzing their own work, because they're not always going to have someone looking over their shoulder. So just getting them to build in that reflective practice of to analyzing their own work will serve them well in the future.
Thanks, Jeff. It's all excellent. And I've learned something, not just professionally, but personally in terms of the ratio. Right. But I do think that's also really powerful in that you are, giving students the power to sort of take charge of their own learning and to be reflective and to become independent, but also you yourself role modeling it and being open to receive feedback. It's very easy to not practice what you preach, and the fact that, mm-hmm. You set the expectation that we're all learning here. This is a learning environment, myself included. I think that can really shift the perception, hopefully make students or trainees more receptive to receiving it, because you yourself are open to sort of lifelong learning and, a growth mm-hmm. mindset and all of those things.
Yeah.
Maybe sort of transitioning a little bit, but it still relates to faculty development and learning. You are one of the co-creators of a website called MedEd Mentor. Can you maybe explain to our listeners what is MedEd Mentor and why did you go about developing this website?
For sure. So MedEd Mentor is an AI-powered virtual mentor for anyone who wants to engage in health professions education scholarship. And scholarship is defined broadly from, building a lecture or planning your teaching in the clinical setting, all the way up through doing hardcore research, really theory-driven research. You can find it at mededmentor.org. And we just celebrated our 1-year anniversary this month. So we're recording this in September of 2024, just spoiler. so this is Mark's 1 year, and we have 1,800 people signed up to use it from over 100 countries. And one thing I just learned, though, is interesting. So our usage came mostly from the United States originally, and now it's mostly coming from, our biggest users are India and the Philippines.
Wow.
So our usage is really shifting to you and I have talked about global north versus global south. Mm-hmm. And don't know, these terms are imperfect, but we are hoping to affect global change and especially uplift scholars and researchers from the global south. So this is encouraging shift in usage. But you mentioned where this came from. So as I told you earlier, when I was at UCSF, I participated in a pathway, health professions education pathway, while I was in residency. And UCSF has some amazing, amazing researchers and teachers and scholars. And I got to learn from them. And it was really hard. It was really hard for me. I was a biology major in undergrad, and then I became a clinician, and I saw the world through this kind of black and white, right and wrong lens. Some of us might describe that as a positivist paradigm. But basically, I thought if we have a question, we can find the right answer using, good methods. And that is not how education works. Education is a social science, which took me a long time to realize, first of all, and then to wrap my head around, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be a social science? And what I have come to realize is, it's far, a lot of the stuff we care about is far more complicated than the biologic processes that we're thinking about. I like to think about a heart attack. That's a thing I treat a lot. And, we have right and wrong answers. When someone's truly having a heart attack, do we give aspirin or not? Yes, we give aspirin because we have all this data to show it. And you know, do we take them to the cath lab and try to put a stent in? Most of the time, yes. So we have answers to these things. But when I'm teaching on the wards, if you just think about all the stuff going on, so everyone brings their own identities with their own emotions, their own backstories. Everyone has different ways of processing information, cognitive processes. We all have different pressures. Some people are worried about grades. Some people are worried about reputations. We're all worried about patient safety, patient outcomes. There's just like so many dynamics going on. And to try to understand this thing we do every day, which is rounds in the hospital, you have to take it apart into smaller pieces. And that is where theories and frameworks come into play. I didn't know what a theory was. I didn't know what a framework was. I didn't know what they were good for. And now I realize it's because what we are interested in studying is incredibly, incredibly complicated. And you have to break it into pieces in order to start to understand it. And once you have enough pieces, you can try to put them back together. So MedEd Mentors trying to help people skip like 5 years of my life where I struggled, and to get up to speed faster and to find theories that might help them do their work faster. And eventually we hope to connect people, you know, use it as a tool to connect global scholars with one another, to really grow as a global community, and learn from the experiences of one another.
Thanks for sharing. I mean, I think your story will resonate with many people, myself included. I didn't know what a paradigm was. I didn't know what a theoretical framework was, never mind the different types of theory. And I think, you know, when I was a student, I would have loved to have made a mentor. And I've shared it with my master's students. I've shared it with South African colleagues to share amongst their networks. And, you know, the sort of limited feedback I've gotten has been positive, to be like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Like the theory index, the sort of brief explanations, I think you've made those core building blocks explicit. And that's very helpful, especially to sort of students and novice researchers, or just those who are interested and want to know, like, what is this complex social science world or paradigm that you're operating within, and to see how rich it is. And yet we do have tools to try and make sense, at least partially, of what's going on. I really enjoy the website and do encourage our listeners to go there. But maybe just to close, thinking about your last comment on MedEd Mentor as a place to connect and to create a global community, any sort of last thoughts about that, or sort of calls for collaboration and participation within MedEd Mentor?
Yeah. So there will be more coming on this shortly, but you and I were both at the AMI conference in August in Switzerland, and I learned a lot. This was my first international conference of any kind, which was really fun. But I just learned a lot about, I'd read about the struggles that people from quote unquote global South, or scholars from the global South, have trying to get their work in health professions education out there in a meaningful way, or in some of these journals that are more competitive. And I got to hear some really powerful firsthand stories of brilliant people who don't necessarily have the support, the guidance, the networks to have their voices heard. And then I learned a lot about people whose native language is not English, and how difficult it can be to try to write in a scholarly way in English, and how that is often a barrier to getting their work seen and heard. So yes, we will have opportunities to collaborate. There will be a way to share your impressions of your context, your health professions education context in your country. Ideally, if English is not your first language, we'll give you the opportunity to write in your first language and help you to translate that into English as well. And we want to hear how these theories and frameworks that have mostly been built in these global North contexts, mm-hmm. how do they play out in your context, mm-hmm. in your health professions education situation? And what can we learn as a global community about where you work and take care of patients and teach? And how might we need to think about these frameworks in a different way to make them fit your context? So that is something that will be coming down the pipeline. And please reach out to me if you would like to, if this interests you and you'd like to get started. My email address is Jeff, with a G, G-E-O-F-F, at mededmentor.org.
Thanks, Jeff. And also, I think this links right back to your feedback conversations where, again, you are being open with your website to say, hey, you know, I've listened to my international colleagues. I've learned. Together, let's mm-hmm. create a conversation. So I see sort of your educational philosophy coming through loud and clear. And I definitely appreciate that we connected at AME and we're mm-hmm. sort of collaborating going forward. And I think it's so important, especially for those who are in the, you know, global north, of which I am in the global north, to mm-hmm. use our resources to support our colleagues from the global south. And so, you know, this podcast is one format. MedEd Mentor is an even larger audience and a very exciting, I think, development. And I'm very keen to see where it goes into the future.
Well, I'm so grateful for this opportunity to speak with you and share my work with your audience.
Such a pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for joining us. I am Danica Sims, your host and producer. Thank you for joining Conversations in MedEd. Hit subscribe and leave a review. I love to hear from listeners, so if you have any comments or questions or recommended guests, please get in contact with me. Contact details can be found in the show notes. Are you passionate about education? Are you interested in conducting educational research? Are you considering obtaining a formal qualification in health professions education? The University of Oxford offers a part-time, two-year master's in medical education through the Department of Education in partnership with the medical school. We introduce students to numerous topics, theory, and evidence from the field, and support them in conducting their own educational research project. For more details, visit the Department of Education webpage. Links can be found in the show notes.